I'm David Martin Davies, and coming up on The Source, the day after Election Day, it's when winners celebrate and congratulate themselves, and the losers wonder what went wrong, what could they have done differently? The Spurs pulled off an Election Day victory that was narrow. Prop B passes with just 52% support, and that looks weak compared to the 57% approval for Proposition A, venue tax money for year-round rodeo. Meanwhile, not a good night for many school districts asking voters to approve property tax increases. So what were voters saying at the polls in Bexar County, across Texas, throughout the country? Can anything be read from last night's results that can point to where the midterms are heading? This is a community conversation. We want to hear from you. Call in at 833-877-8255. That's what's coming up on The Source, but first, this news.
Support for The Source podcast comes from UT Health San Antonio, South Texas' largest academic research institution, where what is discovered in its labs translates into life-changing patient care. More at uthealthsa.org.
Live from the John L. Santico studio in downtown San Antonio, this is The Source from Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. Well, we've learned a lot in the last 24 hours about what people think in San Antonio about the Spurs, Project Marvel, and year-round rodeo. Just judging from yesterday's election results, we now know that Bexar County voters really love year-round rodeo more than they love the Spurs. That could be one conclusion looking at those returns, but I do think it's really much more complicated than that. And we're going to dig in looking at the election results from Bexar County. Some of the high-profile races from across the nation where Democrats outperformed. What does that mean going into midterms? Our phone lines are open. You can call in with what you think happened. How did you vote? What were you thinking when you cast your vote? What do you hope happens next? 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK. We're joined in the studio by Andrea Drush. She writes about local government for the San Antonio Report. Andrea, welcome to The Source. Great to have you back.
Thank you.
Also with us, Sanford Nowlin. He's the editor-in-chief at the San Antonio Current. And Sanford, always good to have you in the studio.
Good to be here. Thank you.
Let's start off with a phone call. You know, I want to hear what people got to say. You know, I know what we got to say, but let's hear what people got to say. Let's go to Henry. And Henry, want to start off with you. You're on the air. Go ahead.
Hi, David. I just have a comment about the ballot slate in general. I don't remember ever being so confused by the wording.
Are you talking about the state propositions? Or the are the Prop A, Bexar County?
Well, those two props had a lot of publicity beforehand, and I admit I didn't do my homework on the other ones because I just didn't get to it. So I had to read them standing up there at the voting booth, and there were actually a couple. I'm pretty well educated, but there were a couple I couldn't choose because it wasn't clear what they were trying to do in the wording on that yellow piece of paper.
Yeah.
And they should be copy edited, not only for truthfulness and accuracy, but also there was Latin on a couple of the financial ones. Ad valorem. Valorem?
Ad valorem.
I mean, I flunked 2 years of Latin in high school, so I consider myself an expert. It's it's not something that you really want to throw at people, you know? And people take the effort to go down there and vote, and then, you know, they're standing there kind of on their feet trying to figure out each question. And I thought it was very confusing.
Well, I think you're not alone, Henry. Thank you for that call. I took 2 years of Latin as well. Ubi ignis est, that means where is the fire in Latin? Only thing I remember. Sanford, to this point here, we had the 17 statewide constitutional propositions, wide-ranging topics, some of them about expand, you know, water, money for water in Texas, $20 billion, money for, you know, Alzheimer's research. But there's also some other ones that were about must be a U.S. citizen to vote, defining that parents have rights over their children.
Speaking of vague wording.
Yeah, so these were, and so if I think that's why the lines moved so slow. People were reading these things very thoroughly, and they hadn't really had a chance to dive in. And the reason why they're written so badly is not because they go through a copy editor. They go through legislation. They're written by lawyers in Austin at the legislative level. So
talk about that. Some people who are political observers would argue that they're deliberately vague. Right. Mm-hmm. I mean, we've seen some of these ballot propositions where they're worded in a way that you're sort of voting for a negative, which makes it look like you're voting against something, but in reality, you're voting for it. Right. And an example, the Proposition 15, the parental rights proposition, which really has big implications in terms of what, you know, parents can do in terms of, you know, imposing book bans in their schools and telling teachers what they can teach in the classroom, was so vaguely worded, it just basically sounded like, oh, that sounds okay. Parents should have rights to, mm-hmm. you know, to for their kids to do what they, you know, want them to do.
Well, I wonder about parents. You know, not all parents are good parents. You know,
sure.
You can go to court and you can see, you know, child abuse cases in Texas that are horrifying. And sometimes the state has to step in and they have to terminate parental rights, and whether or not that's going to protect the children, to keep the children alive.
Yeah, well, certainly the people who have criticized Prop 15 talk about just how vaguely worded it is and all the implications that we may not quite understand yet because of that vague wording. And the end result of this is that if you look at these constitutional amendments that end up on the ballot in Texas, is most of the time they pass because people just don't get them, and they sort of give it a cursory look and say, well, I guess that sounds okay, and move on. And again, here you saw all 17 pass.
Well, and some of these were more overtly partisan, and you mentioned the big night the Democrats had nationally, but what does that say about Texas that each of these sailed through?
They typically sail through. 4 years ago, one didn't. That was the one that was going to raise the age for judges in Texas, and that stunned everyone when it failed. But it's pretty much a rubber stamp process. And because of, our caller, Henry, was like, I didn't know. We're just going to see how it goes. It's kind of some sailed through, you know, with huge margins. Other was a lot more tight and close.
And they don't tend to get a lot of media coverage either. I mean,
well, we tried to do our bit here.
Yeah, I mean, same here. You know, we tried to make people aware of the worst of the worst of these. But at the end of the day, not everyone got a whole lot of coverage. And, you know, my wife and I think we're pretty well informed, but we basically walked into the poll with cheat sheets to tell us, you know, which of these to vote no on and which, you know, we had to think ahead.
Well, as you talk about who writes these things, it reminds me of when UTSA sought to pull the ballot propositions regarding on the last November ballot about city manager pay and city council pay. And they pulled it based on sort of the sentiment of, would you raise their pay from this to this? Would you? And people were so angry that the polling didn't match the ballot language, and they ended up sailing through, whereas the polling of the sentiment was not the same.
And as you said, there was red meat issues in these 17 propositions. Number 17 was about allowing people with private property on border counties to be exempt from property taxes if they build their border security infrastructure.
Yeah.
And it's like, well, it seemed like this really is such a small item, impacts so few people, and does anyone not build border infrastructure because they're worried about property taxes? Maybe it was just there because they wanted to get border security somewhere on the ballot and be able to claim that this is what
that could be. I mean, Proposition 16 was also alarming if you looked into it, because basically it gives Greg Abbott more power, decide when judges have behaved badly and need to be punished. And
that's six.
Huh?
Proposition six.
I'm sorry to get that mixed up.
Yeah, we all mixed up.
Yeah, Proposition six. But yeah, that's another one that when I've talked to people in the legal community, they're like, this is a terrible idea. Why, you know, if you're trying to have a balance of power and checks and balances in the state, why give the executive branch more control over the judicial branch?
It okay, makes no so sense. We've covered the props. The statewide props, but we really want to dig down into the propositions A and B here in Bexar County. We're going to do that when we come back from the break. I've got some callers, Robert, Carl, and Aaron. I'll get you on the air when we come back. 833-877-8255. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. You're listening to The Source on Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. We're talking about what happened yesterday at the ballot. Let's talk about propositions A and B. We now know that Bexar County voters do support the Spurs and the new arena. You know, we know that they support it, you know, by about 52%. But they really do like year-round rodeo by about 57%. So what to make of that? Give us a call, 833-877-8255. Let's go to Robert. And Robert, you're on the air.
Hey, thank you for taking my call. I think on a national level, first of all, voters are saying we're tired of the MAGA Republican and Trump, and we want change, and I think it's going to continue. On the local level, well, the Spurs, with the $7 million plus that they spend, bought the 10,000 votes that they needed to win the election. Otherwise, I don't think they would have won the Proposition B. And I'll have one more comment. The citizens need to brace, because it's going to be additional costs they haven't told us about, and more than likely we're going to have bonds in the future for those additional costs.
All right.
Proposition B.
All right, Robert, thank you for that. Okay, so Proposition B for the new arena for the San Antonio Spurs, county would raise the venue tax for that. Andrew Drush, what do you make of the outcome there?
Well, gosh, headed into yesterday, it seemed like the pro campaign was not optimistic about how this is going to go. And you had former assistant city manager Lori Houston, who was one of the visionaries for this project at TPR just a couple weeks ago, saying what this really takes to do something like this is political support, the private sector support, and the public embracing it. And they weren't sure whether the public was on board. And so this is really the only test that we're going to get, because the city money is tied to the county money. And so that 52-48 outcome is where we are.
Do you think, Andrew, that the 52% did it squeak by? Was this like another Memorial Day miracle where they're able to sink a three-pointer from the sidelines? You know, how did that work?
Well, so I just heard you two talking about other arena votes in San Antonio, but it made me think of sort of nationwide. These have gotten harder and harder to pass, to bring voters on board with. And so sort of two different dynamics there. Maybe it's passed with less support than past sports arena deals in San Antonio, but nationwide, it seems like that's a win.
Right. So, Sanford, what do you think about, you know, the 52%? What does that mean? How will that resonate moving forward? Because this is not a done deal yet. Project Marvel is not a done deal.
Yeah, that would be the interesting thing to see. Look, I think for the Spurs, a win is a win on this, right? They got what they want, and it's moving forward. But I think the city has got to look at the fact that, right, you know, you only won this thing by a 4% margin. There were a lot of people motivated to go to the polls, even in a city that loves this team, even in a city where this is the only pro team and we have a generational talent in Victor Wembanyama.
Wimby,
yes, who was beloved. I mean, you know, it wasn't so much about, I think, whether folks want to support the Spurs, but rather how this was introduced to them, how this proposal was put in front of them. And I think a lot of people see this, rightly or wrongly, as a boondoggle that was sort of forced down their throat very quickly. It was rushed onto the November ballot, and there was very little public input. You saw the mayor basically saying, look, we need more study on this. Why don't we slow down, tap the brakes? And that didn't really get much of a response. And I think that's what you're seeing. To me, this particular election reminds me more of the two Applewhite elections than it did previous arena votes, previous sports facility votes in San Antonio, in that it brought out people.
Only us old timers know what you mean by Applewhite.
Okay, well, it was a reservoir that was basically going to provide drinking water for part of San Antonio, and a lot of voters basically perceived it as, okay, the city has basically gone behind our back, come up with this plan, and they're trying to force it down our throat without any public input. And, you know, I'm not saying whether it was a great idea or a bad idea. I'm just saying that
was a bad idea.
Yeah, it was. Okay.
They were telling us if we didn't pass Applewhite that San Antonio would run out of water.
We're going to dry up and blow away. But that's always the way these things work. It's like if they want it to pass, they're going to tell us it's going to bring jobs and prosperity, going to take us to the next level. We're going to no longer be a second tier city, but a first tier city. And you saw a lot of that stuff with this vote. And I think, to me, it felt like much like the Applewhite vote, in that it brought people across the political spectrum who feel like they don't have a say in city politics together to vote against this thing. And the thing, too, that you have to remember is voters have heard these promises about economic development before. They heard it with the Alamo Dome. They heard it with the East Side arena that they built for the Spurs. And that stuff just doesn't materialize.
Well, they heard it with Proposition A.
Oh, sure.
Yeah. So let's go to another caller really quick. Let's go to Carl. Carl, thank you so much for calling in. I want to hear what you got to say. You're on the air.
Thank you for having me on. Well, my problem is there should have been, instead of just Prop A and Prop B, there should have been a Prop C, which talks about the sports district. Everybody tied it into the Spurs arena. Spurs are loved here. I think San Antonio would have supported the Spurs, but the biggest problem is nobody's talking about this sports venue that they also tapped onto. That who's going to fund that? How is that going to be handled? Is this going to be another Fiesta Plaza fiasco?
All right, Carl.
Since Naris was mayor, that we got stuck with a pink elephant that no businessman moved into, and we had Bill Miller's bail us out on that. Is this going to be another one of those type of projects that the city's invested in that we're going to lose out altogether?
All right. So more background.
Playing the oldies today, right?
Yeah, we're playing the oldies. The hits.
Fiesta Plaza.
Fiesta Plaza. Yeah, so old Mario's restaurant, and the city bulldozed it down, and they built this mall at that location that no one wanted and no one went to, and it quickly died. And then Mayor Wolf at the time was able to convince, Bill Miller, as he mentioned, Bill Miller, the corporation, and they acquired the property, and then they were able to turn it into downtown UTSA.
Yeah.
So that's how that happened.
But once again, I mean, it was one of those things where you had city leaders promising these majestic, marvelous things that it would, we would turn the corner and defeat poverty on the west side, and it would be a gate to prosperity and downtown.
Sometimes it works. I mean, the River Center Mall. That's how we got that. I mean, it's a mall.
That works.
But that first presentation of the big vision, then closer to the vote, they were saying, oh, we wish we'd just talked about the arena. The bigger vision is off-putting to people, and it's confusing, and we should have just led with the arena. So I see why the idea of trying to map out where everything could go, but now some people have seen a rendering that has a land bridge that's probably not a part of this anymore, and so...
Also, an extension of the Riverwalk that kind of goes right up to the...
And then they forget things like, oh, there's that Saws chiller plant that we're going to have to spend $200 million to move.
Yeah. We're going to have the head of Saws, Robert Puente, on tomorrow. We're going to get into that for sure.
Well, yeah, look, I think there's a lot of confusion around this whole thing with Project Marble because it's so pie in the sky. It's so huge. There's so many moving parts. How does the arena fit into it? And I've heard that from voters, that they were perplexed about how all this stuff fits in together. Can I have an arena without a Project Marble how does this all work?
Carl's point, though, he says we should have had Proposition C. Well, Proposition C still could happen because what he's talking about is the city's component of this whole thing. And so we've heard Mayor Ortiz Jones say that maybe we need another vote. Maybe we need a city vote on what happens next. That would have to get through the city council. I don't know if they'd go along with that. But there, the $500 million that the city is going to have to pony up to make this happen is going to, why not have a local vote on that as well, particularly when 52% looks pretty thin on what happened.
I mean, and when you're talking about the chiller plant and all this infrastructure that's going to go in, I mean, you're going to have to issue bonds to make that happen. And that may have to happen as early as May if you're really going to throttle ahead on this project.
You're going to have to issue blood pressure medicine to everyone who works downtown because we're talking about tearing up those streets all over again.
Well, see, I think that's another reason that there was reticence to support the arena plan was people have a bad taste in their mouth from Broadway, from North St. Mary's, from North New Braunfels, from
South Alamo, two and a half years overdue.
Yeah. I mean, that was a 2017 bond, and we're still not done with it. And you're seeing, you know, businesses close as a result.
And to the caller's point about trying to put an accurate price tag on all of this and all of the pieces that are related to this, and in covering it, it's been such a challenge to, you know, you have Judge Peter Sakai saying, we're only talking about the venue tax. This is only venue tax dollars. But then the city makes its contribution hinge on the passage of Prop B. And then you also have the convention center development, which involves this moving the Saws plant and the UTSA Institute of Texts and Cultures, which is already gone before voters had even weighed in on this.
Well, it was gone while there was still litigation that was still being about, should this be preserved? And that didn't stop the wrecking balls. But, you know, Judge Peter Sakai, when questioning, he's saying, well, this venue tax increase has nothing to do with Project Marvel. We're just talking about money for a Spurs arena. We don't know what Spurs arena, where it's going to go. And it's really just on its face disingenuous because we knew really what was going on. I'm going to get to another caller. We have Aaron. Aaron, you're on the air.
Hi, yes. Thank you for taking my call. I want to say I am over the moon. I am so happy this proposition passed. I know this is a direct contrast to your previous two callers, but I see optimism. I hear pessimism on the radio, but I am optimistic. Investment in downtown is a big thing. Our urban core should be shouldn't be stagnant. It should be chopped up, and this is a good way to do it. And the fact that the Spurs Arena is going to be bringing 15,000 people every single game to the Riverwalk, all those businesses, is a very good thing indeed. So I was listening to your previous two callers, and I just got to say, like, hey, I mean, you guys see gray clouds. You guys see things that are bad. I think building a brand new arena downtown is going to be a fantastic thing. And I hope you guys will get to experience it. And when you walk out of the arena, you're like, you know what? I'm going to take a water taxi to the Pearl and I'm going to go eat. You'll realize that this was a good move. This was a fantastic idea. And yesterday, what was it? Like 80,000 people voted yes and 50,000 people voted no. And democracy won. Thank you.
All right, Aaron, so glad to hear your call. Thank you for calling in on that. Do you want to react to that, Andrea?
Let's talk a little bit about the Sports and Entertainment District. And I have wondered how much of that vision for what could be downtown motivated voters versus just the Spurs piece of it. The funding mechanism for this involves new development around the arena that would generate property taxes that are captured in a TERS that would then repay the bonds issues to build the arena. And so there is certainly concern from experts who look at this about, do these arenas actually draw that type of development? In this case, you have the Spurs saying, we will create that development, and if not, there won't be the money in the TERS to repay these arena bonds. So there's a lot of, it's an interesting model of doing this, but the idea being that Hemisphere area would look extremely different at the end of this. The land bridge was what seemed like such a cool feature in the renderings that could make it into something more than a sports district, like an urban park downtown that is not a piece of it anymore, or is not currently a piece of it anymore. But I have been very curious about whether that greater vision for downtown is what's motivating voters.
Well, I appreciate Aaron's take. I'm sure there are a lot of Spurs fans that are really happy with what happened. But we have to look at the returns, the outcome. And they won, but, you know, it was a close call. And it could have gone either way. And what put it over the top was the $7 million plus that the Spurs were able to put into their mailers, their advertising, their voter outreach.
Text messages from Eva Longoria, Ron Nuremberg.
Yeah, tell her, stop texting me, Eva. Come on.
I think before all the dust clears, we're going to see that's about a $10 million investment they made.
We'll see that in January at the semiannual report.
Yeah. But this has impact. There were a lot of headwinds, economic headwinds. We're going to talk more about that moving forward. And what does this mean for COPS Metro? I mean, are they going to be a force in San Antonio politics again? The number is 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK. The source continues right after this. You're listening to The Source on Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. We're looking at the election from yesterday. In the studio, Andrea Drush. She writes about local government for the San Antonio Report, and Sanford Nolan, he is the editor-in-chief for the San Antonio Current. We're inviting your phone calls. We really want to hear what voters think about how the election turned out. We're really kind of focusing on Proposition A and B, year-round rodeo A, and the Spurs Arena downtown for Proposition B, also known as Project Marvel. 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK. And we have Manny. Manny, go ahead. You're on the air.
Yeah, hi. I think I have a question in terms of possible indirect impact. So we moved to the Southtown neighborhood about 10 years ago, because we love the artist community. And over the past 10 years, we've seen a significant increase in house prices and therefore the property taxes. And I'm just worried that with Prop B going through, we're going to get a lot of investors coming in, increasing prices further for the real estate, bringing STRs, and really changing the neighborhood and forcing out the artist community.
Manny, thank you for that. That's a great insight into what's happening in that important part of San Antonio. Andrew Drush, is that a real possibility?
There is certainly speculation on this hemisphere, Sports and Entertainment District, the Oxbow. The folks behind the Pearl have already purchased a piece of land across Cesar Chavez that is intended to be developed into housing and mixed use across from the new arena district. So it seems like a reasonable concern.
And Sanford, do you think this is can be buttered? Can be done to stop this from happening, buttressed?
Yeah, that's a good question. I mean, we really haven't seen the city be effective so far in terms of sort of constraining housing prices, right? There, you know, we've talked about trying to do something about affordable housing, and it's been a slow start. And I don't know how you avoid those prices going up, although there is the sort of the natural, I guess, process of, you know, I just don't think San Antonio's downtown is ever going to become Chicago's downtown, New York's downtown, San Francisco's downtown, because we continue just to expand outward and expand outward and expand outward. And it's really hard to develop a critical mass downtown when you've got downtowns, competing downtowns all over the footprint of the city. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? I mean, it's like it just, you know, when you see cities with really vibrant, robust downtowns, they're usually sort of landlocked, or there is an effort to sort of constrain development. But in San Antonio,
it's
just
spilling into these legacy neighborhoods around downtown. Yeah. Also,
but it's been on my mind as we were covering this that, you know, so much of the complaints about Project Marvel were the behind closed doors negotiations for so long before the public knew about it, and a part of that is who knew and who could speculate in the meantime.
Sure.
Yeah, that's. I think that's why there are some feelings of like negativity. It's like, what's going on here? This is backroom politics.
In San Antonio politics, that is the way to bring out coalitions that cut across political lines. Is to have people think that they're being forced to vote for a boondoggle that they had no input on, that was basically assembled behind closed doors and in secret. And I think a lot of people felt that way about this deal, rightly or wrongly.
Let's go to Thomas on the phones. And Thomas, thanks for calling in. You're on the air.
Thanks for having me. My comment is about Prop B specifically, and my hope that City Council revisits the term sheet. One area that I think has not been reported on enough is the fact that the city ownership will remove any taxes for the other taxing entities, including the ISD. So the $1.3 billion that the city will then own will not be taxed. And so that will be lost revenue to both the ISD and the other taxing entities. So I really hope that the community benefit agreement grows, because quick math on that, $1.3 billion at the current rate for the San Antonio ISD is something like $15 million a year. So thank you for taking my call.
All right, Thomas, thank you for that. So, Andrea, right now that land is not taxed, right?
Right.
Because it is public land.
But some of that is going to have to become taxable property, because that is how the
But
the
moving
city was,
forward, yes. But presently, there is no, it's not being taxed.
It's primarily government-owned, different federal government, UTSA.
So it does, the school districts are not going to be losing money. They may be actually gaining some money, although you have to look into the complicated workings of school finance to actually realize they're not going to actually make more money, because there will be a reduction in state dollars as more local dollars develop. But they're not going to lose money because of this.
Well, the way the TERS works, so far the city is the only participant in that, which is taking those property taxes off new development and reinvesting it to pay off the arena bonds. But the county is not a part of that TERS. I don't believe the school district is a part of that TERS. So should there be new taxable value within that zone, the school district and the county would be benefiting from that.
Okay. Let's go to Kathy on the phones. Kathy, you're on the air.
Hey, David. I just wanted to say that I live in the first block of Lavaca Street, which is essentially the corner of South Alamo and Cesar Chavez. So in the past few years, we've been seeing our share of construction. Mm-hmm. So I just, but we supported this arena and the Coliseum, and we're very glad it passed, because you know it's time for us to stand up and continue to say we want to be a big boy city. You know, we want to be a real city that people want to come to and they respect and they think of as one of the great cities in the country. And a great city in this country doesn't let its NBA team be sucked away by Las Vegas or Seattle or Austin. It stands up when it needs to. And I'll also say that I've never bought a ticket to a Spurs game, but I'm really for this arena and this rodeo expansion.
All right, Kathy, thank you so much for calling in. We appreciate your take on that. So she brought up some interesting points there about how, you know, the Spurs could leave. That was her. She was concerned about that. And Sanford, while the Spurs and ownership and this campaign never said that they would leave, there were people like Henry Cisneros who had an op-ed in the Express News who said that would happen.
Downward spiral. San Antonio was going to get in a downward spiral.
Downward spiral. Yeah. Those were his words. Yeah. So that seemed to be something that a lot of people voted, because they did not want that to happen. It would be a very bad day in San Antonio when the Spurs, if they ever decided they were going to leave.
Well, yeah, if you remember the AT&T Center / Frost Bank Center debate when that was going on back in 1999, there was a lot of speculation about what would happen if it didn't get built. Would the Spurs leave San Antonio? I think if this got voted down, and then we couldn't come up with an alternate plan within the next year, year and a half, or something like that, you could see the ownership group go, yeah, maybe we're not wanted here. I don't necessarily think that would have happened, though. I think if this had gotten shot down, I think there would have been a very quick pivot, and the city and the county and the Spurs would have tried to figure out an alternate solution. And I don't think the NBA would be cheering on a move of a profitable franchise into another city that they view as an expansion team. They would rather have, you know, two teams instead of one team that just hops from, you know, a profitable location into one that may take some time to build. So, you know.
So you didn't see that as a real threat?
I didn't. I saw it as a threat if we, you know, 2 or 3 years down the line, we were not making any progress in terms of figuring out where the Spurs arena, you know, went next. But I didn't see it as an immediate threat, no.
Like
and a lot of sports economists tend to agree that the NBA is not in haste for cities to be trading arenas like trading cards.
Right, but it does happen.
Yeah, it does.
Okay, so Andrew Drush.
I feel like I heard sort of competing narratives throughout this campaign, one being, oh, the team's ownership has changed. It includes more out-of-state investors
now.
Hey,
Michael Dell.
They will, you know, it's not entirely the Holtz decision whether they stay here. If this fails, he won't be
the
only one. And then also the opposite, that, oh, my gosh, this is one of the only longest family-owned teams. This is their investment in the community. And so both sides of that, but not directly from the Holtz, ever really addressed.
Yeah, well, they can't say it directly, you know, because otherwise it would – they can't announce, okay, we're going to leave San Antonio. We're going to leave tomorrow. They're going to be here for years if they have made that decision. So they don't want to kill their fan base from one day to the next. So this is something that they have to manage.
Well, I do think it was interesting.
We're in total control of this team. Oh, also – but we're not in total control of this team. If this fails, somebody else might be causing us to make a different choice.
Right. So the question, though, was do you think this question was a dominating question when people went to go vote yesterday? You think people voted in favor of Proposition B because they did not want the Spurs to leave San Antonio?
For at least a segment of the voting population.
Yeah, I was at the Spurs watch party last night, and I certainly heard people saying, you know, we've got to keep our team here, and this is what we need to do to keep our team here. So I think you know, that it was a motivator for a lot of people that turned out to vote for the arena.
And when you ask Cops Metro, and I do want to talk about Cops Metro when we come back from this break, you know, they're saying, you know, that type of loyalty is supposed to be a two-way street. You know, it's not good to have that idea that they could just pick up and go. It's like a relationship, you know.
Right.
If you have a partner, life partner, and they're constantly saying, "I'm gonna pick up and go back moving with my mom," it's not very healthy.
Even though my research suggests to me, right, that if there was a single no vote on this arena and we had to go back to square one, that the Spurs would not leave. Clearly, the Spurs didn't bother. Were not bothered if people had that impression that would be the case, right? Because, you know, at some of these town halls, people ask Bobby Perez, the general counsel for the Spurs, "Are you planning on moving out of San Antonio if this doesn't go your way?" And he wouldn't answer the question.
He can't answer it, but yeah. Well, all right. Well, anyway, we got to take a break here. We do want to hear from some of our listeners or callers. How did you vote yesterday? You want to tell us, and what was your logic? What, and are you happy with the outcome, or are you miserable? 833-877-8255. The Source continues after a 1 minute break. You're listening to The Source on Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. We're talking about Propositions A and B, and they sailed through the voters yesterday. But, you know, Proposition A sailed much higher than Prop B. Prop A, which is the year-round rodeo, that got to 57% of the vote. This was presented as it was going to help revitalize the east side by having year-round rodeo at this facility. But also we heard from the San Antonio Stock Show and Rodeo is that they would still do year-round rodeo with or without the passage. There was a lot of contradictions, a lot of unanswered questions, and it seemed like this got a pass. Not a lot of examination of, like, do they really need this money? How is it going to be spent? And is this really going to revitalize the east side? And I think we're going to come back in 10 years and be able to say, no, it's not going to change how, you know, what a uncomfortable location that is for having big events. It's still going to be the same way. But, you know, Sanford, if you want to talk about Prop A and why it did so well with voters, I'd love to hear it.
Wow, I wish I knew. It did seem
everyone loves year-round rodeo.
Yeah. I think there was sort of perhaps a perception that, you know, eventually the Spurs are going to leave the east side, and gosh, it would be nice to actually try to do something with these facilities if that's going to happen. That would be my guess for why that got the support it did. But I agree with you. I don't think we're going to come back in 10 years from now and go, wow, that we're suddenly the rodeo capital of the world, and we've got people coming in, you know, constantly for these events.
But they're talking about revitalizing. This was like, oh, the Spurs did not follow through in 1999, and this is going to somehow fix that.
And the logic for that hinges on the idea that these rodeo visitors are overnight guests. So this also hinges on the idea of a hotel that is keeping them there.
There's no hotel there. I got to tell you, I've been there. I've seen it. There ain't no hotel. Mm-hmm. So
I grew up in Fort Worth, right? And they were comparing this to, you know, we're going to create something akin to the Fort Worth Stockyards. Well, the Fort Worth Stockyards were kind of a cool historical site to begin with.
And it's even accessible then, to downtown.
Huh?
Accessible
to downtown. And it took a while for that to really build into what it is now. We're not starting with the same thing here. And I think if we build it into something bigger and more exciting, it is going to take quite some time to do that.
I'm not surprised that this seemed popular. When you look at the pictures, it looks really cool. It looks like a fairgrounds. It looks like outdoor space. But I wondered how many people had seen any of those pictures. This isn't like Project Marvel, where the rendering was everywhere. There is this bigger vision for the east side, but I don't think it's particularly well known.
I mean, I think we're going to come back in 10 years and be disappointed.
Well, I will say one thing, and I don't know whether this really entered into voters' thoughts or not, but I do feel there was more public input on this proposal than there was on the Spurs thing, because, I mean, you know, Tommy Calvert held, you know, public input sessions and invited people to come talk about what they wanted to do with that facility and where they saw it going forward in the future and how to revitalize the east side. So there was at least some public input there, and I wonder if perhaps for some voters it felt less like a backroom deal than the arena. And again, I'm not saying the arena was a backroom deal, but perception is everything in these elections.
And very all right, little organized caller. Opposition to it.
Say again?
And very little organized opposition to that. There was, you know,
right, the Cops Metro, they took a neutral position.
But yeah, they focused specifically on Prop B.
But they're still getting a lot of money. Prop A is a lot of money. Mm-hmm. So it's not like nothing. Let's go to caller Jerry. Jerry, you're on the air.
Hey, I just had a comment about what are they going to do with the Frost Bank Center now that the Spurs are moving? I mean, I've been thinking if the Spurs moved for whatever reason, why don't we get a WNBA franchise team to put in that stadium?
Okay, so that's what Prop A is all about. And so what they want to do is have year-round, like basically, it sounds year-round rodeo is not a really good term because it makes it sound like every day they're going to have the carnival and stock show and all these things. But is this going to be like once a week? Maybe they'll have goat roping or something.
I think there were in some of the documents. There's an actual estimate of how many they would attract, how many events there would be, and I want to say it's somewhere between 40 and 50. It's not a literal year round thing where there's events all the time.
Right. So is that going to be enough to keep that area going? They're still going to have graduations at the Freeman Coliseum and still have concerts.
Sure. And the other thing to consider, too, is like, you know, every rodeo competition is not going to be the size of the San Antonio Stock Show and Rodeo, which that's still going to be the big daddy of them all. And some of these others are going to be relatively small.
This came together so quickly, it felt like at Commissioner's Court, it was we want to plan for the Frostbank Center before we agree to something new for the Spurs. And then this was, you know, very quick. They came out with a list of the repairs that they thought were needed at the Frostbank Center and the Freeman Coliseum. And the Frostbank Center, that's currently covered by the Spurs under their lease. If they leave that lease, who's going to pay for this? So there was this quick desire to find a new anchor tenant who would hold enough events that this would be a self-sustaining venue. And this vision hinges on visitors coming in for all of these Western-themed events. And I was a little shocked to hear how in Cody Davenport, the rodeo CEO, talking about, well, you know, I went to the judge and I said I have a plan for this. And then it just happened. And I thought a lot is hinging on whether that happens.
Yeah, and so I think that it should have drawn more scrutiny. Let's go to caller Steve. Steve, you're on the air. And Steve, can you hear me?
Yes.
All right, you're on the air.
Ah, hi, David. I am really, really pleased you're covering this, and especially so quickly. I voted for both Prop A and Prop B, but for slightly different reasons, but much the same reason. And that's that both of them would put a fairly big capital investment in two facilities that are actually a group of small, disorganized, and slightly undersized and aging facilities. And all of them need an upgrade if they're going to be continued and if they're going to be competitive with other facilities throughout the state. I think that both of them can be big, big magnets for a lot of activities that aren't here yet, but need to be planned and need to be organized, and hopefully with a bit more planning, especially given the last comment. But I do have one concern about both of them, because we all know that tourism has mainly got employees that are at the lower end of the job ladder and at the lower end of the skills ladder. It's, I think, critical that we look at building enterprises that go with these two large facilities now that are going to be better escalators for families and for the people working in these institutions to be able to continue to participate in these and build better incomes, better opportunities for themselves and their families. And I'd like to hear more about how people plan to do that.
All right, Steve, thank you for that very nuanced question, very insightful. Appreciate you bringing that up. And so, I've waited tables and worked in hospitality while taking classes and improving my education. It doesn't have to be, a dead-end kind of a job, but it's a job that sustains a lot of families and allows people to do a lot of things. Sanford?
Well, yeah, I wish the city would have been more aggressive in pursuing some of those guarantees that these jobs would come with some sort of upward mobility, but that's really doesn't appear to be baked into what we've got so far.
Gosh, the term sheet mentioned, no, it's not the term sheet. The Stone's report mentions that the most of the salary considerations of this are for the team players. But that's where most of the wealth would come from in salaries for locals and the players.
And people have specifically asked the Spurs, what kind of jobs are you creating? And they say market rate jobs, not union jobs, And that's why you saw one of the hospitality
Spurs
union
from the
locals
east side
come
to
out
downtown
against us.
Doesn't create more jobs necessarily,
No. I mean, you sort
the
of
Spurs
move.
Are the Spurs. Yeah. So they're going to be the same, But it's really about this around them. And if that's going to create more jobs. And this was something that Cops Metro was very much keyed into. And I do want to talk about them really quickly. Of course, with very little money, they took on the Spurs. The Spurs spent well over $7 million for their, star-studded saturation campaign. And they went toe-to-toe with them. Do you think that Andrea, do you think that the Cops Metro is coming out of this election, even though they lost, but they're going to come out with more sway, more flex, more political capital?
I wonder about that, too. I went over to their offices off Breckenridge Park leading up to this election and was surprised to sort of learn about how this little group from San Antonio has arms all over the country, has chapters coming to learn from them about what they do. There are certainly others looking at their model. This populist message that they've been talking about for 50 years here has never been more politically popular, and people are trying to model their success elsewhere. And they're also comparing notes about projects like this, about sports and entertainment districts and who owns these teams and all the overlap that they see, which seems to have professionalized this campaign.
Yeah, and Sanford, where do you think, how's Cops Metro coming out of this?
Yeah, I think you can look at the poll numbers and see that they had a huge impact. And I think you can look at the fact that the Spurs were very worried going into this, to the point where Bobby Perez was down at one of the polling stations shaking hands with people.
Maybe a little bit too hard, shaking hands.
Yeah, but trying to get last-minute sway people to vote for Prop B, it was very obvious to me that Cops Metro put the fear of God into the Spurs, and I think, coming out of this, I think you're going to see people at the city level especially looking at them more seriously.
I think Cops Metro has an abundance of something that's a short supply these days, which is public trust. People do think that they were looking out for the little guy in San Antonio, that they were speaking truth to power in this new environment. What we saw across the country yesterday, that is something that, a lot of people are looking for. So I don't think we've heard the last of Cops Metro. They've been around for 50 years, and they're not going away now.
This is definitely a feather in their cap.
So I think it's so interesting that the people who are elected to replace longtime leaders at the city and county sound a lot like Cops Metro, and yet projects like this still move through. And
yeah, so there's still a lot of work to be done. Andrea Drush, thank you so much for coming in today. Local government reporter for San Antonio Report, Sanford Nolan. He is the editor-in-chief at the San Antonio Current. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. Thanks for listening.
This has been The Source on Texas Public Radio. The Source is hosted by David Martin Davies. Tim Gutierrez is the show's producer. Additional production support from Steve Short, Ruben Garcia, Yvette Benavides, and Dan Katz, Vice President of News. The Source is made possible with support from the Gladys and Ralph Lazarus Foundation.